Dhanyavad. We will continue discussing the importance of devotee association. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yes, so last night we were discussing the importance of devotee association, and we discussed a number of points. First of all, we discussed how association in general, well, actually, we discussed how association of devotees is one of the main principles as described by Lord Chaitanya. Sadhu Sangha Namakirtan Bhagavatravan Matura Vastrimurtiya Shradaya Sevan. So, these five activities, Lord Chaitanya said, they are the most powerful of all devotional activities. But the first one is Sadhu Sangha, and the others, generally, we perform in the association of devotees, like the Namakirtan. Generally, it's in the association of devotees. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam generally is with the other devotees, and like that. So, that was the first point. Then we discussed, in a general sense, the effects of association. And we quoted that verse from none other than Hiranyakashipu. The soul is like crystal. And crystal, you hold crystal up to a light, any light, clear light, red light, blue light, green light, any light, whatever the light is, you hold the crystal up, and immediately the light shines through. So, similarly, and Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse, Rupa Goswami actually quotes it in Bhakti Rasamrita Sandhya, and Srila Prabhupada gives it in Nectar of Devotion, to make the point that whoever you associate with, good, bad, whatever, but that association has its effect, and you cannot avoid that. So we should associate with devotees. Then we discussed, reading from the ninth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 4, the story of Maharaj Ambarish and Devasa Muni. We read a few verses in which the Supreme Lord explains how he not just appreciates the association of devotees, but how he feels dependent on that. If you recall, there was that one verse we read, 9th Canto, chapter 4, verse 64 it was, in which the Supreme Lord says that without the association of my devotees, then all my opulence in Vaikuntha, all my power as the Supreme Lord, it just doesn't mean anything. It becomes empty without the association of devotees. So, of course, if the association of devotees is so important for Krishna, how important is it for us? It really is most extremely important. And so then, at the end, we explain a little bit about the value of the association of devotees and appreciating devotees. We told the story of Kalidas from Chaitanya Charitamrita, who was the uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami, and he valued the association of devotees so much that every day he would just go out to get the association of devotees and to serve them in different ways. So these things we discussed last night, and this night we'll, this evening we'll continue on from that point. So I wanted to begin the discussion this evening by discussing the subject in terms of the importance of the association of devotees, to discuss how do we get devotional service? How does a person who is not a devotee, an ordinary person in this world, how does such a person get devotional service? The answer to the question is through the association of devotees. But some people, when this question is raised, how does a non-devotee become a devotee? So people, of course, they have different ideas. Hare Krishna, everyone. Bienvenue. So people have different ideas. This is discussed in different places, but particularly we see Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur discusses in Madhurya Kadambini. So he raises the question, how do people get devotional service from having been in material life? And he suggests a number of possible answers to that question. Like, what do you think? By luck. How does that sound? Just luck. There are two people, they are not devotees. They're walking down the street. What is the main street of Flack called? Does it have a name?
Royal Road.
A Royal Road. Okay. So they're walking down the Royal Road to... They're walking down the Royal Road. And they're just walking down the road. And suddenly one of them just becomes a devotee just like that. By luck. Out of the blue. He was not intending to. Maybe he was not even wanting to. But suddenly he was a devotee. Just by luck. Whereas the other one, equally walking down the road, he just didn't become a devotee. He just remained Mr. Ordinary. So how does that sound? Just by luck. Good idea? I don't think so. Srila Prabhupada explained, actually, there is no such thing as luck. Isn't that an interesting idea in itself? There is no such thing as luck. It is just that sometimes some things happen to people and they're not able to explain how, or not just not able to explain, but they cannot see the causes. And because they cannot see the causes, they think, oh, just happened by luck. But there is no such thing as luck. On the material level, there is karma. So anyway, in this way, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that no, people who are not devotees, they're materialistic people, do not become devotees by luck. Then he suggests, what about by good karma? Good karma. You know, sometimes it happens. Someone is very poor. They're born very poor. They're living like that. But then, by their karma, they get lots of money. And suddenly they're rich. And they become the king of Flack. On the royal road, of course. By their karma. So is it, what do you think, that because a person previously they did very pious activities, like, for example, they fed the poor people, the hungry people, they gave clothes to the very poor people who just wear rags, or they arrange some education for the very poor people they can't afford to send their children to school, or whatever it may be, you know. They helped old ladies cross the road. Like this, people do materially good things. Materially good things. They get good karma as a result. So could it be that through doing some of those materially good things, someone, as a result, like karmic reaction, they would become devotees? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, no, it can't be. Because all those material activities, they are material. And the results they produce are material. But devotional service, to be a devotee, this is spiritual. It is a different category. A different category of thing. That which is material cannot produce something which is spiritual. The example, an example which is given is, if you plant an orange seed, or, you know, this is Mauritius, shall we say, if you plant a sugar seed, is there such a thing? Do you get, can you buy sugar seeds? You can't. You just get a cutting, is it? All right, a stem. So let's just say, for argument's sake, you get a stem and you plant it. Now, what is the likelihood that as a result you'll get a mango tree? You know, what say, we just said one stem, what say you get a million stems? Now that's a lot. And you plant your million stems. Out of those million stems, couldn't you expect to at least get one orange tree? What do you think? He says, no. At least one. No, it's not. No, because the effect, the result of doing something is controlled by what you do, isn't it? If you do material activity, you get material result. But Krishna consciousness is spiritual. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, no, you cannot get spiritual, transcendental Krishna consciousness as a result of doing some material activity. So then he raises a very interesting sounding proposal, What about by the mercy of Krishna? What do you think? Does that sound good? Sounds better, doesn't it? By the mercy of Krishna, someone becomes a devotee. But in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 29, any Bhagavad Gita scholars here? Chapter 9, verse 29, Samoham sarvabhuteshu na me dveshasti na priyaha. Krishna says that I am equal to all living entities. Na me dveshasti. I don't hate anyone. Na priyaha. No one is particularly dear to me. Samoham. I am the same to everyone. So, this idea then, that Krishna may just choose, you know, there's a whole room of people. Let's just say here, just as an example. Of course, you're all devotees. But let's just say you're, for the sake of the example, you are not all devotees. And here you are, you're just sitting here. And suddenly Krishna decides, okay, I will give Giridhari, Krishna consciousness, everybody else tough luck. You can all just wallow in flak on royal road. But him, we'll give him Krishna consciousness. And Ramvijay, well, he's not a bad guy, but no, we're not going to give it to him. We're going to give it to him. And to him, the child, what's his name again? Giri Govardhan, no, we won't give it to him either. This is just an example. So in this way, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes the point that Krishna does not just choose someone to give Krishna consciousness too, because he is the same to everyone. So how do people get Krishna consciousness? The answer Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives is through the association of devotees. The devotees are carrying Krishna consciousness. The devotees are radiating Krishna consciousness. Whoever they meet, then it is like there is an energy of Krishna consciousness. What to speak of when they speak? But just being near them, it is like, you know, if a fire is burning, there's that energy coming out, that heat. And if you get close, you just feel it. So the devotees are just emanating Krishna consciousness. You know, I remember when I first joined this movement in England many years ago, we would go out distributing books in the streets. And we sometimes, because we would get harassed occasionally by the police, would you believe? I was arrested many times for the terrible crime of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books on the street. Isn't that bad? I'm just a very bad person. So many times I got arrested, I couldn't say how many. Maybe 50 times or maybe more. And on some occasions I got locked up. You see? Really? Once I got locked up for 3 nights, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they locked me up in the jail. They took away my chanting beads and my neck beads and my Brahman thread. They said they were afraid I might hang myself. Seriously. And there I was for 3 nights and 2 full days in the jail. And I was found guilty. Well, I pleaded guilty in court on Monday to the terrible crime of obstructing the footpath. in London by standing there handing people's books and stopping the people. And I got fined, I think, £5. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are looking at a criminal. Beware. In terms of association, you should beware, because I may turn you into a criminal too. So, but anyway. Yes. So we would go out like that. And sometimes, to avoid these types of problems, because, you know, when you go down the street dressed like this, it is very hard to look inconspicuous, particularly in a place like London. So we would disguise ourselves, put on ordinary clothes, even sometimes wigs or hats, and, you know, disguise ourselves. So there we would be, distributing books, disguised, hoping that the police would not get us. And then suddenly some person, comes down the street and sees us and says, "Oh, Hare Krishna." And we would say, "No." "Not." And they say, "Yes, you're Hare Krishna." Because they could tell. I mean, oftentimes the devotees, like, they have an effulgence. Materialistic people tend to look rather dull and drab, but devotees look jolly and bright. So, yes, the devotees, you get Krishna consciousness from the devotees. Just by seeing them, you may get Krishna consciousness, let alone if they speak to you. It's like that. And the thing is, the point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes is that the devotees, their business, particularly in the movement of Lord Chaitanya, is to distribute Krishna consciousness. This is the natural activity of the followers of Lord Chaitanya. So therefore the devotees are out. The devotees are everywhere. The devotees are everywhere. You would be amazed where the devotees are distributing Krishna consciousness. And people are getting Krishna consciousness from the devotees. I've told this story before to illustrate this point. I'll tell it again. That some of our devotees in America, they were traveling around the country distributing books. And they were living in their van, like a camper van. And one day they were in one city, and unknown to them, some people robbed a bank at gunpoint in the same city and escaped in a vehicle which was identical to our devotees' camper van. Yeah. But the devotees didn't know. And that night they were sleeping in the camper van in some holiday park place. And suddenly in the middle of the night, they heard the sound of helicopters above them. And they looked out the window, there were floodlights. There were a number of vehicles all pointing towards them with their headlights shining on their car and floodlights all on their van. And the devotees thought, "Gee whiz, what's going on?" So they got out, and there are all these police with machine guns surrounding their van. And all these helicopters, and it was all focused on their van. So the devotees were wondering, "What is this?" And this big policeman, you know, like a really serious policeman, not a lightweight Mauritian policeman. Of course, they're very friendly. But these are like really heavy people. This big policeman came walking up with a machine gun, with some of his friends with machine guns, and said to the devotees, "We know who you are. You robbed the bank." And the devotees said, "What? No, we're Hare Krishnas." And the main policeman said, no, come on. You robbed the bank." And the leading devotee said, "No, we're distributing books here." And he gave this chief policeman a book. And this big policeman, looking at Bhagavad Gita, said, "What? Hare Krishnas? I don't believe it." And the guy said, no, we're Hare Krishnas." And he pulled his seeker out. See? The Hare Krishnas. And I mean, the devotees, they're all shaking, because all these men with machine guns, it's not very nice. And this policeman just walked right up to him, like face to face, except the policeman was about that much above him. And the policeman just looked down at him and looked at the Bhagavad Gita and looked at him and said, "All glories to Srila Prabhupada." Because he was a devotee. Yeah. There are devotees everywhere. It's amazing. I was getting on, I don't even know what day it is today, but was it Wednesday or Thursday? It was the 30th. I was flying out of Moscow. I checked in at the airport, Lufthansa, and this girl there, just ordinary girl working on the check-in counter, she said, "Oh, I think Krishna wanted you to go on this flight." She was a devotee. Yes, so the devotees, because this is Lord Chaitanya's movement, it is the business, the natural activity of the devotees to go around distributing Krishna consciousness. And they are empowered by Lord Chaitanya to do that. He has given them power of attorney to do that. So this is how people get Krishna consciousness, from the devotees. In other words, the association of devotees. So this is a very important point, isn't it? Association of devotees is so important. And there's one verse I want to read from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is 11th canto, chapter 20, verse 8. And this is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Yad ruchaya mat kata do jata shradas tu yapuman nanyaravino nati sakto bhakti yogo syasiddhita. If somehow or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. Now this verse is discussed in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Literally, what Krishna says is, yad richaya, means somehow or other, by good fortune, someone gets Krishna consciousness. Our acharyas, though, like Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion, they analyze this word, yad richaya, then it means somehow or other people get the association of devotees. Somehow or other they get the association of devotees. This is how people get Krishna consciousness. Not by other means and like that. So, in commenting on this verse, if you don't mind me just making one slightly technical point, in commenting on this verse, 11:28, our acharyas point out another verse, quote another verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It is 10:51-53. Bhava pavargo brahmato yadabhavej janas yatariyachuta satsamagama satsangamo yarhi tadaiva sadgato paravareshe twai jayate mati. So, translation. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may attain the association of your devotees. And when he associates with them, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and their effects. So now, I said it's a slightly technical point, not extremely, but a little bit. But it's a very interesting point. The verse itself is saying, when the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, he may attain the association of devotees. In other words, the material life ceases, then he gets the association of devotees. But our acharyas explain, Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, all of them explain a very interesting and little technical point. So, actually it is the association of devotees which causes the material life of the conditioned soul to end. If you remember, the verse appears to say, the material life of a person ends, then he gets the association of devotees. So all the acharyas say though, it is the association of devotees which causes the material life of the conditioned soul to end. Not that when his material life has ended, then he gets the association of devotees. So, why has it been stated the way it has in the verse? That his material life ceases, then he gets the association. So the point is, there is a grammatical rule which has been invoked. When the logical order of a cause and its effect are inverted, the logical order, cause, then effect, but it is inverted, effect, then cause, that should be understood as the grammatical rule ati shayokti. This rule is when a kind of quote unquote exaggeration is used to speak of a result before its cause in order to express the swiftness of the cause. Did you get that? You didn't get that. In order to express how powerful the cause is, how quickly it acts, there is this grammatical kind of like structure which can be used, that in the sentence the result is mentioned before the cause. So it appears that the result is the cause, and the cause is the result. But because the cause is so powerful, and it causes the result so quickly, sometimes they invert them. This is called atishayokti. Anyway, as I said, it's a little technical. I hope no one is sitting there sort of with their head spinning about this. But the point is that the association of devotees is so powerful and it acts so quickly that it's sort of like 1 minute you're not a devotee, suddenly next minute you're a devotee. It's so fast. So people, in other words, what is being said in that verse is that when people get the association of devotees, then their material life ceases just like that. Good night. Good night. Bonsoir. Material life. Bienvenue, Krishna consciousness. So yes, it is the association of devotees. Krishna empowers the devotees. Krishna gives power of attorney to the devotees, that take my mercy, take my mission, you take these things, you give them out. So therefore people get Krishna consciousness by the association of the devotees. So now I wanted to move on to a couple of other points. One point I wanted to discuss is how devotee association can protect us. Or on the other hand, how not having devotee association can leave us in a dangerous position. Now, first of all, to discuss it from the point of view of how not having devotee association can leave us in a dangerous position, there is the very interesting story, history, in Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, of Maharaj Bharat. I think you've all heard of Maharaj Bharat. So, he was a great devotee. Or at least he was a good devotee. If not a really, really, really great devotee. But he was a very good devotee. Very sincere, very dedicated devotee. And he was king of the whole planet. So, Maharaj Bharat, as is the Vedic tradition, when he started to enter old age, then he decided to leave home and leave his kingdom and everything and go to the forest and focus on Krishna consciousness. The Srila Prabhupada would quote one little Vedic aphorism, a little sutra, Pancha Sordvam Vanam Vrajet, which means, when you turn 50, you should go to the forest or take sannyas, leave everything and just go and dedicate yourself to Krishna consciousness. And, you know, for that matter, many times if you read Prabhupada's books and listen to his lectures, you'll see, you'll hear Prabhupada saying so many times, when you turn 50, you should take sannyas. So any of you men, I'm looking around now, I can see some of you are, look like you are over 50, so. We are accepting volunteers here if you would like to step forward. But anyway, seriously, Maharaj Bharat, he came to that point. Prabhupada said old age begins at 50. Prabhupada said between 55, after 55, it really sets in. I can vouch for that. So Maharaj Bharat decided, okay, I will leave home and I will go to the forest and I'll just focus on Krishna consciousness and go through my old age and at the end go back to Godhead. This is the Vedic system. So he did it. He left home. He left home. The Bhagavatam itself says he left everything. His wonderful family, his tremendous opulence, his powerful position, all his followers and supporters and assistants and all everyone and everything. He left all these things and people and his palace. Just like a person leaves stool after passing it. Hare Krishna. Now, that's quite a graphic example, isn't it? It's quite a graphic example. We all know what that means. And we all know what it's like. But he left all these things, which otherwise people think are so nice. But for that higher cause of Krishna consciousness, he left it all behind. Srila Prabhupada told a story. Let me tell you. Just, it is about stool, would you believe? I told it the other night here, but many of you missed it. So this is from Srila Prabhupada. There was one man. He had a big feast at night. And at the end, he had this big gulab jamun. Big, juicy, you know, you could squeeze it and the sugary syrup would come out. It was just nectar. So he had it at the end of the feast. Then he took rest. In the morning he got up. First thing, went to the bathroom. Past stool. Now he's looking at the stool. And he thought, look at this stool, it's horrible. You know, ugh. It's just filthy and smelly and it's just terrible. And the stool spoke to him. The stool said, you remember that gulab jamun? That was me. But just through one night's association with you, I ended up like this. Anyway, excuse me. That was slightly X-rated. But Srila Prabhupada told this story. Srila Prabhupada told this story. So anyway, yeah, Maharaj Bharat, he just left everything like that. No farewell party. No speeches, how nice it has been working with you and knowing you. Just one morning they woke up, he was not there. So off he went into the forest. And if you're familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, you would know that he was living there nicely, basically. He had his own little ashram to himself. And he was living there on his own, chanting Hare Krishna and so on. But one day, a baby deer happened on the scene. A baby deer. Actually, he saw a lion kill the mother. And this baby deer is just left there with no mother and just newly born. And Maharaj Bharat He became very compassionate. He adopted the deer. And he became like the mother, so to speak. And all day, all night, he was just, everything was revolving around this little deer. He was just totally fascinated by the deer. And the Bhagavatam explains, he died shortly afterwards, remembering the deer. And in his next life, he became a deer. You're familiar with that story, I'm sure many of you are at least. So yeah, he became a deer. Now, Jiva Goswami discusses in Bhakti Sandarbha, how did this happen? Because he was a very good devotee. He was an extremely good devotee. How did he end up becoming so attracted by an animal? You know, it's one thing to help the animal if the animal needs food and help the animal for a little while and then let it just go off and live its natural life in the forest. But he just became deer conscious. So Jiva Goswami raises the question, how? How did it happen? And he gives two answers. Well, actually no, there's one answer. There's one answer. He says, as a result of previous aparad, as a result of previous aparad, when he left home, he became very subtly confused. Very subtly confused. So he left home, he went into the forest. He could have, and what normally happens is, in this sort of situation, people, they go into the forest, they find some ashram, which is already there, and there's a lot of devotees there, they join the ashram, and they live with the devotees, and in this way they progress. But he didn't do it. He made his own ashram. So Jiva Goswami explained that through, as a subtle result of previous aparad, he made the decision, I will live on my own. I will not stay with devotees. I will stay on my own. I'll have my own ashram. It'll be nice and quiet. When I want to sleep in and miss Mangalarti, no one will come running around and shake me and wake me up. So, you know, it'll be more pleasant. And when I want to chant my rounds, people will not come running around and ask me to come and please wash the pots. I'll just be able to do what I like when I like. But Jiva Goswami says, this thinking that I will not stay with the devotees, I will stay on my own, even as a devotee, this was the effect of some previous offense. And as a result, not being with the devotees, when the situation arose, there was no one to tell him, just wait a minute, you're getting too much into this. Let the deer go. No, you don't have to become the mother. Just let the deer go. There was no one to tell him. So this is an example then, very important and famous example of someone who became bewildered through not having the association of devotees. We mentioned yesterday that the devotees, the association of devotees can be like a mirror. It is hard for us to really evaluate ourselves spiritually. But it is easier for other devotees of course, very experienced devotees, but it is easier for them to evaluate us objectively than it is for us to evaluate ourselves. We will tend to be very charitable. As they say, in a court, you do not ask the criminal what his punishment should be. You don't ask the criminal. You ask the judge. Yes, so like this, devotees can be like a mirror. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, this sort of point is discussed. It is in the Madhya Lila. Oh, I actually have to get which chapter. But it's in the Madhya Lila. There's the description of the mad elephant of offenses, and particularly the mad elephant offense, offending the devotees. So there's this whole discussion. Lord Chaitanya is discussing, Prabhupada is explaining in his purports. And Lord Chaitanya makes the point that if you offend devotees, it is like letting a mad elephant into your garden. You know, you may have a little garden at home. Here, Amma and Deepa have a nice little garden at the bottom just here. And there are all sorts of different things growing. And you can just imagine if a mad elephant, any elephant, what to speak of a mad one, got into your little garden, or Amma and Deepa's garden, it would be goodnight garden in a matter of seconds. It really would. Everything would just be wiped out like that. So offending devotees is hatimata, the mad elephant offense. It crushes our devotional service. So Lord Chaitanya then discusses how to be protected from that. What to do. And Lord Chaitanya says, you have to put a fence around yourself. Or actually, he gives the example of the bhakti lata, that our development as devotees, our development in devotional service, is compared to the growing of a creeper. So when a creeper is growing, you have to protect it. And particularly when you're in the earlier stages of Krishna consciousness and your creeper is not so strong, you have to protect it. So Lord Chaitanya says you have to put a fence around your creeper. Now, what sort of fence shall we put around? Barbed wire? Or, you know, shall we put a concrete wall around it? What shall we do? He says, no, you must make a fence of the association of pure devotees. This is how you protect your devotional creeper, by being surrounded always by pure devotees. So like this, the association of devotees is very important to protect us. Then, interesting story. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say, in terms of devotees protecting us, he would say, he who flatters me is my enemy. He who criticizes me is my friend. Now, it might be a little difficult to look on people like that. Someone tells you you're just the most wonderful devotee, you would be inclined to think, you're pretty nice too. And if someone tells you you're a dirty, rotten something, something, then you would tend to think that, well, you are too. I think this is material human nature. One time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was touring South India and doing, like, going from one city to the next every day, a different city, and doing programs every evening. And one evening, like a whole program, one evening at the program, some man was there, and at the end, questions time, the man put up his hand, said, "Yeah, I want to say something." And he started criticizing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And everyone was shocked, and the devotees were horrified. And they were going to sort of, quote-unquote, do something about it. But Lord Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, no, let him finish. So he finished. They moved on the next day. That night, the next night, whole program, the same man was there. And the same thing happened. Yeah, I want to say something. And again he criticized Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. It went on for 2 weeks. Every day, every night. And you know, by that time, the devotees were ready to call the mafia. Really, and just, you know, seriously do something about this man. And suddenly one night, the man was not there. And the devotees were like, "Phew, great, fantastic." Then the message, somehow the message came through. The man had died. And the devotees went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "You know, we should have a festival. Let's cook a feast. Grosbois, chouchou, biryani. And what else? And Dal Puri, of course, from the royal road. Let's just celebrate." But then they noticed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was crying. He was crying. And the devotees couldn't figure it out. And what happened? You know, it's good. The man was a demon. It's nice when demons are killed, it's good. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, "No, he was my friend. He was trying to help me." And the devotees were saying, "Well, no, he was our enemy. And he's an aparadhi. He's offensive. He was an enemy of the Vaishnavas." Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gave very interesting answer. Said, "Enemy? You want to know who your enemy is? You want to know? Look in the mirror. There he is. You got him. Your enemy. That one who keeps thinking, I could go back to material life and do this and that. Like this." Yes, so the devotees, sometimes in order to protect us, the devotees may chastise us. Even sometimes they may chastise us wrongly, actually. But we should try to come to that point that we feel, yes, this is all helping me get rid of my false ego. One of Prabhupada's servants, every day Prabhupada would chastise him for something, and sometimes for things he had not done. But he didn't say anything. But one day he thought, you know, next time Prabhupada chastises me for something I didn't do, I'll tell him. So, the next time Prabhupada said, "Why did you do this?" He didn't do it. "Why did you do that?" He didn't do it. So the devotees said, "Well, actually, Srila Prabhupada, you know, I didn't do that. it was somebody else. And Prabhupada said, yes, I know it wasn't you. I'm just trying to break your false ego. So, yes, he who flatters me is my enemy. He who criticizes me is my friend. This is protection in Krishna consciousness. Then, how devotees can inspire us, the association of devotees can inspire us, how the devotees can help us, how in the association of devotees we get their mercy and it helps us in devotional service, even though we're not very deserving. Classic example is, well, it's someone who got mercy from Krishna, but the principle is illustrated, is Putana. Putana was, of course, a demon. Krishna killed her. When Krishna was just about to kill her, she looked at him, little baby in the cradle, little infant, just days old, and a little motherly feeling arose, just momentarily, just like that, and it was gone. And then she tried to kill Krishna, and Krishna killed her. So then, Krishna, she went to Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna accepted that little bit of motherly mood and overlooked so much demoniac mood. Even she tried to kill him, but he accepted the good and she went to Goloka Vrindavan. So the devotees, often the devotees are like that. Prabhupada actually, in the purport of one verse which is discussing this, Prabhupada says, this is the standard of a person of good character. They can accept the good from a person and overlook the bad. So devotees, in the association of devotees, sometimes devotees do like this, and that helps us in our devotional service. Therefore, there's great mercy in the association of devotees. One time, Srila Prabhupada, there was one girl, she was an artist. She had just joined the temple. Hare Krishna, it's okay, you'll survive. Don't panic, don't give up hope. Yeah. So, she'd just become a devotee, she's something of an artist. She wanted to paint for Prabhupada's books. So she painted a painting according to her very neophyte conception of things. She painted a painting of Krishna feeling separation from Srimati Radharani. This is a very high subject matter. And then she was taken in by the BBT devotees to show Prabhupada. So Prabhupada looked at this painting like, Prabhupada said, what is this? Girl said, Srila Prabhupada, this is Krishna feeling separation from Srimati Radharani. Prabhupada said, no. This is not what Krishna looks like when he's feeling separation from Srimati Radharani. Prabhupada said, this looks like some ordinary young boy who just lost his girlfriend. When Krishna's in separation, it is the highest ecstasy. Doesn't look like, you know, oh, life is terrible. And this poor girl, new devotee, she started crying. And she couldn't even leave the room. She was just there crying. And this went on like for a minute. She was just overwhelmed. Then Prabhupada thought. Prabhupada said, yes, I know. We can use this photo, or this painting. And Prabhupada said, we will call this painting Krishna Has a Headache. So the painting was accepted by Prabhupada. She was very happy and very encouraged and went on to become one of the great artists for Srila Prabhupada's books. But, you know, truly speaking, she was not qualified, and the painting reflected that. And if it was just a matter of calling a spade, then that would have been the end, really. She would have given up and been frustrated. But the association of devotees, particularly someone like Srila Prabhupada, but actually so many devotees, their hearts are like that. That when they see some devotee is struggling, then they feel how to help this devotee. So we should try to cultivate that mood and not be too hard on other devotees. We shouldn't be too hard on other devotees. You know, when they're down, give them a good kick just to make sure they don't get up again. No, we should not do this. But we should try and follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada in this regard and encourage the devotees. There's a very important part of association. Because even if a devotee has a problem, I mean, everyone has some problem, but even if a devotee has a serious problem, if they're dealt with nicely and encouraged to really take shelter of the process and the devotees and not give up, then they can come through. So we should try to help them and give that type of association. As an example, I was told this by Niranjan Maharaj, who's a very great devotee, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. One time, Srila Prabhupada was having his massage, like, I don't know, late morning perhaps, and his secretary was reading the mail to him, and Prabhupada's being massaged and listening to the letters. And there are a couple of other devotees there. So, there's this one letter then. The secretary starts reading. The devotee who wrote the letter said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm having such serious problems in my Krishna consciousness. I cannot give up smoking. He said that sometimes I can. I give it up. I stop. And things go on, but then after a few weeks, I get bewildered and I smoke again. And then I smoke for a little while. Then after a while, I make an effort, I stop again. And then I stop for some time. But then after a while, I smoke again. I don't know what to do, Srila Prabhupada. So, now, this devotee was listening. And the devotee was sitting there thinking, what a nonsense. Just look at this guy. He's smoking. He won't stop smoking. What sort of devotee is this? And Prabhupada's sitting there being massaged, just listening. And the devotee's thinking, Then the secretary finished reading the letter. And Srila Prabhupada thought momentarily. And Srila Prabhupada said, "What a great soul. He's struggling so hard for Krishna. Even though it's so difficult because of his conditioning and his bad habit, but still he's trying so hard for Krishna." So this is the heart of a Vaishnava. Of course, this is the heart of a pure Vaishnava. But my point in general is that we, in our associating, giving association to devotees, we should also try to be merciful to them and not, you know, be fault finders and gossipers. And because if you give mercy, you will get mercy in the association of devotees. So even the devotees are so merciful, like it is said, let me just close by saying, it is said, the demon that Lord Ram would kill, Lord Krishna would spare his life. The demon who Krishna would kill, Lord Chaitanya would spare his life. The demon who Lord Chaitanya would kill, Lord Nityananda would spare his life and give him Krishna prema. Because Lord Nityananda is in the mood of the devotee. So there's one incident. Mukunda Dutt was one of Lord Chaitanya's associates. He was a great singer, kirtan singer. But his family, he was living in one of these joint families, you know, father, uncles, and grandparents, and brothers, and cousins, and everyone's together. But that family, different members, had different sort of spiritual leanings. Some were devotees, some were demigod worshippers, some were Mayavadis. And he, in order to avoid conflict, whenever there was a discussion, and one of them would say, "Lord Shiva is supreme," Mukunda Dutt would say, "Okay, Lord Shiva is supreme, fine." When someone would say, "Durga is supreme," Mukunda Dutt would say, okay, fine, Durga is supreme. When someone would say, "It is all one," Mukunda Dutt would say, right, fine, it's all one, just to avoid conflict. When someone would say, "We are all God," then Mukunda Dutt would say, "Yeah, sure, fine, that's okay. And Lord Chaitanya is also." And he would just agree, just to avoid conflict. But in this particular pastime, Lord Chaitanya heard about this. He didn't appreciate it. At least he acted like that. And he told the devotees, "I don't want to see this Mukunda again. He's a hypocrite. When he's with us, it's all hurry, hurry, bowl. But when he's with his Shivite relatives, it's yes, Lord Shiva, Om Namo Shivaya, and all like this." So, you know, he's not a real devotee. And Lord Chaitanya said, you know, he is like a person. He comes to you. With one hand, he offers you a flower. But his other hand is behind his back. In his other hand, he has a club. So he gives you the flower, and you think, "Oh, how nice, thank you." Suddenly, whack. He hits you with the club. Lord Chaitanya said, "He's like this, I don't want to see him again." So the devotees appealed to Lord Chaitanya, "Please, You know, it's not really like that. He doesn't really think like that. But Lord Chaitanya said, no, not interested. And Mukunda, when he was told, the Lord never wants to see you again, he became devastated. Then Shrivas appealed to Lord Chaitanya, please. You know, he's really a nice devotee. He's just doing this for social reasons. His heart is different. Please be merciful and let him see you again. Lord Chaitanya said, all right. He can see me after 10 million lifetimes. When Mukunda heard that, he became ecstatic. He was just jumping and dancing and rolling and screaming in ecstasy. I will see my Lord after 10 million lifetimes. How wonderful! And Lord Chaitanya asked, what's going on out there? Who is that? And Shrivas said, well, it's Mukunda. He's so happy to hear that you'll see him in 10 million lifetimes. Lord Chaitanya said, oh, just bring him now. So they did. So they went out to get him. But he was in such ecstasy, just wild, completely wild ecstasy. They couldn't catch him. Eventually they caught him and they brought him in. So anyway, it's a nice story. But my point is, Lord Chaitanya wouldn't see him, but the devotees were begging Lord Chaitanya, please. So the devotees are even more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. And if we stay in the association of devotees, and if we can endear ourselves by service and humility, endear ourselves to the devotees, that's the best position. There's no better position. To be at the lotus feet of the devotees, under their shelter, in devotional service. So these are some thoughts on the importance of devotee association. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Yes, sir. Oh, Guruji. Hare Krishna. Kinanya.
How to identify a devotee?
Okay. Here we have a very deep question. It is almost as deep as the question, what is Krishna's name? Can you answer that? What is Krishna's name? It's Krishna. Okay. So, yeah, how can we identify a devotee? Lord Chaitanya was asked this in Chaitanya Charitamrita by, who was it? The inhabitants of Kulia. Was it? Kulia? Somebody like that. They came each year for 3 years and ask Lord Chaitanya the same question. How can we identify a devotee? So the first time, Lord Chaitanya answered that, well, effectively the answer is, anyone who chants Hare Krishna one time in his or her life is a devotee. Actually, specifically, Lord Chaitanya said, anyone who does that once in their life is the best amongst the common men. Or, in terms of levels of devotees, is a Kanishta Adhikari, a low level, beginning level devotee. Anyone who chants Hare Krishna once in their life. The next year they came, they asked the same question. Then Lord Chaitanya answered differently in terms now of a middle class devotee, second class, not beginning class, middle class. Lord Chaitanya said, anyone who is always chanting Hare Krishna is the best of the devotees. This is Madhyam Adhikari, middle class devotee, always Krishna conscious. The next year they came back, they asked the same question. This time Lord Chaitanya answered it in terms of the highest class devotee, Uttama Adhikari. Lord Chaitanya said, any person who, when you see them, you naturally chant Hare Krishna, is the best of the devotees. So anyway, you know, in very simple terms, anyone who is chanting Hare Krishna is a devotee. And we should always respect them. Actually, we should always respect any living entity. But more particularly, we should respect those who chant Hare Krishna. Then, next, you could say, those who appreciate the position of Srila Prabhupada, his unique position, not just that he's very nice, you know, a very nice Swami amongst many Swamis, but those who really appreciate, actually, Prabhupada, he's the one. So they are really devotees. They're like good devotees. Yeah. So in these ways, we can identify. Any other comment or question? Okay, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
Go ahead.